The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Good afternoon on this Thursday afternoon. How are you? If you want to contact the programme, 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. We got an email in overnight. It says, I wonder, could you please pass on this little message to Jean Tierney when she joined you today? I've been following her journey on Operation Transformation, and I'll save the rest of it because we will pass that message on to Jean, and we will be talking to Jean after 4 o'clock. And she announced last night on Operation Transformation that she will no longer be taking part in the programme because she is pregnant. And if you know Jean's story, that is a big, that's big news for her. Because since 2015, she has been pregnant 3 times, but she'll tell us her story and she'll tell us her good news again when we speak to her after 4 o'clock. Another email that came in to ray@rte.ie. Just watching the 9 o'clock news and listening to the incredible figure of 78,000 women who are awaiting their cervical smear test results. Imagine that figure of 78,000 women. It's just under 4,000 short of filling Crow Park, Ray. Full capacity in Crow Park is 82,000. Does that not give the full perspective of the problem? Shame on the Irish government. Again, I was watching it last night and I was listening to all the coverage yesterday because they were in front of the health committee, and Stephen Donnelly from Fianna Fáil was quite good in his questioning. But would this be the case if it was a man's medical problem? Would this be the case? I doubt it very much so. And they were talking about it yesterday, and they said that the chances of I better do this properly now and quote this man, Dr. McKenney. He says it would be foolhardy to say there is no risk to these 78,000 women. But in general, it is low. And Stephen Donnelly did the maths on it, and based on 78,000 tests, some 1,200 could have abnormalities, said Mr. Donnelly. That's from the statistics. Now, okay, the risk is low, but it's there. And if you're one of those 78,000 women, how does that make you feel? Sleepless nights, I would think. Anxiety. I don't know where this is all going to end. And of course, it all started with, I suppose, a sort of a good deed on behalf of the government when the Vicky Phelan story emerged and there was panic and people went out and they were sort of invited by the government to go and get their smear tests done again. Of course, hundreds of thousands of women did. And that's why there's a 78,000 backlog now. Of course, they should have thought it through. They should have thought it through. Children's Hospital, they should have thought it through. Should think things through, shouldn't they? Doesn't happen that often. Or maybe it does and we just don't hear about it. It's when, you know, the consequence of not thinking it through emerges that we have this cervical check controversy, and we have the controversies around the Children's Hospital as well. There's loads of good news around today. Loads of good news around today. Temperatures 15 degrees tomorrow. When you think about it, this time last year we were weeks away from Beast from the East. With a forecast of wintry showers and daytime temperatures of no more than 6 degrees. And they're saying tomorrow could be 15 degrees. It's beautiful out there. Good news as well if you're in your 50s. The Resolution Foundation has sifted through 7 years of data collected by the Office of National Statistics in the UK and announced this week that 51 years of age is the turning point. The moment when you're over the miserable hump of turning 50 and due to experience feelings of higher self-worth and lowered anxiety. There's a happiness curve, according to Jonathan Rauch. He has done research. He says, so what happens is happiness slowly decreased in your 20s and 30s before nose diving, sorry about this to give you this bad news, in your late 40s. And then, thank goodness, recovering once you're through 50, edging upwards until you hit 80. That's so something to look forward to. Something to look forward to. Other good news, Ard O'Hanlon is to do a guest appearance in Derry Girls this year. Creator of Derry Girls, Lisa McGee, who we've spoken to on numerous occasions, says, I absolutely love Ard O'Hanlon. I love him. And we've worked with him before. He just has the real unique thing that you just love watching him. He's funny and you like him. He has that likability. And the season 2 of Derry Girls is to be on our TV soon. They don't have an exact date. So Ard O'Hanlon and Tommy Tiernan and all that other cast, I'm really looking forward to seeing season 2 of Derry Girls. I've spoken to loads of people over the years who've tried to give up cigarettes and failed, and I've spoken to some who've tried to give them up and succeeded. And I've never been able to completely understand the addiction that is nicotine addiction. But I'm going to understand a little bit more today because I'm reading Keith Richards. He gave an interview to the Rolling Stone, is it? Or Mojo magazine. And he says, quitting heroin is like hell, but it's a short hell. Cigarettes are just always there and you've always done it. I just pick them up and light them up without thinking about it. So in the interview, he says that he's drinking less now. He's trying to give up cigarettes. He says, I've a little wine with meals and a beer or two. But otherwise, mind you, if you say, do you want a drink? I wouldn't turn it down. I'm not a Puritan. So giving up cigarettes is more difficult than giving up heroin, in the words of Rolling Stone, Keith Richards. Good news as well for children under five. Dolly Parton is coming to Ireland to give away free books. Well, not really, but her charity is. Imagination Library. She set it up in 1995. It's currently active in the US, the UK, Canada and Australia, and it's coming to Ireland, starting off in Talla. It's Dolly Parton's charity, and since 1995, she gives free books to children under five every month. At the moment, she's given out 1.3 million free books to children under five. And Ireland will be the fifth country in which it operates. And although the project is beginning in Talla, it's hoped it will be extended to other parts of the country. And it's supported by the Dublin Rotary Club, Shamrock Rovers and Unpost, who will deliver the books free of charge for a year. And in a statement, Dolly Parton says, you can never get enough books into the hands of young children. I know there are children in Ireland with their own dreams. The dream of becoming a doctor, an inventor or a teacher. Who knows? Maybe a writer or a singer. I'm just going to put in like me at the end there. I don't know if she said that or not. That's a brilliant idea, isn't it? Imagination Library. All those free books to be delivered by free by Unpost, courtesy of Dolly Parton and her charity. And this is good news for some of you out there. If you have a lovely photo of a holiday, but the person you're with in the photograph isn't part of your life anymore, you can send it off to Edit My Ex. We remove your ex from your photos. Now, you could do it yourself at home, you know, using Photoshop, but these are professionals. So you have that picture of you with the fella or the girl that you were in love with at the time, and you have those lovely smiley pictures in Lanzarote or on the Empire State Building or underneath the Eiffel Tower, and you just want you in it. They'll send it off and they'll send it back with just you in it. The ex is gone. Edit my ex. It's only a picture. You can't do it in real life. There's an article in the Mail today. It's a new book about where you're born in the family. People are fascinated by this. But now in the book, this man suggests that you can choose your partner on where they are situated in their families. So, if you were a firstborn in your family, listen up. Best match is lastborn. Opposites attract, I suppose. Worst match is another firstborn. So two firstborns together won't work, says this man. If you're a middle child, best match is lastborn. Worst match is another middle child. And if you're a lastborn, the best match is firstborn. We've said that already. And the worst match is another lastborn. So it's from a book called The New Birth Order, Why You Are the Way You Are. And it's by a man called, let's see, he won't move me there. There you go. Kevin Leman. Kevin Leman. The more I live and the more I see people and know where they were situated in their families, the first and second, it's so obvious to me, and I've seen it in so many families. And it is about parenting, because when you have your first child, you're a bit tense, you're a bit anxious. It's your first child, you're completely responsible for this human being. They're completely dependent on you 24/7, and you haven't done it before. And it doesn't matter what advice you get, you're still doing it for the first time, and it's scary. So you're a bit tense, you're a bit anxious, right? So then the second one comes along, you've done it all before. You're a lot more relaxed. And your tension, your anxiety, and your relaxation, they show in the personality of your children. So the firstborn, health and safety officer. Secondborn, a little bit of a tearaway, a lot more relaxed. You know, I've seen it so many times. And I'm not generalising, I swear. Smear test assurances will not allay fears until they get the all clear. People will always worry that they're among the few who have cause for concern. That's exactly what I was saying, and that's the problem, isn't it? And it's easy talking figures and low risk and 1,200 out of 78,000, but every one of those 78,000 fear that they're one of the 1,200. People shouldn't have to wait for months on results for smear tests. It's not right. They should have a backup system that people can get their results. And on the cervical smears, why can we not get a lab for ourselves? We have plenty of very qualified people at home and all over the world. We have to start somewhere, regards Maeve. Well, that's in the capital programme for expenditure, and a lab, 5 million I think they've put aside. But as somebody was saying on the radio yesterday, or read it in the paper, that's a long process by the time you get planning permission, you put it out to tender, and then it goes another 5 million over budget. The venerable Matt Talbot, who is best known for his conversion after alcoholism, said it was a million more times harder to give up the drink than the cigarettes, says Sean. Who does an only child marry? I'll check that out for you. What about if you're an only child? Somebody else wants that. I think I read, or Will said it to me, that only children shouldn't marry only children, because you've, you know... It looks like opposites, I think, opposites. Hi, Ray and production team. As a regular listener from Sligo, can I wish Ray Darcy and all his production team a wonderful St. Valentine's Day? Well, thank you very much, Philip. Thoroughly enjoy listening to the show, and I would love someday to be a contributor on it. Well, what have you got to contribute, Philip? Let us know. ray@rte.ie, and we'll give it due consideration. Have you done your duty? Oh, no, it's not a duty. Have you done what you wanted to do for Valentine's Day? A person in my life... has sent a, well, not sent because it didn't go in the post, it was sort of placed somewhere, a card to a secret admirer, which is very sweet when you're all of six. And it brings you back to, you know, when you're that age, well, it's very young, I will admit, but I remember at about the age of 12 or 13, I got a card from a secret admirer, and the odd time, you know, when I'm feeling a bit low, I still draw on that. Well, somebody back then thought I was ace. you draw on these things from way back, don't you? You just keep them there for the bad days. Anyway, whatever happened today and whatever your situation is, whether you're single or not single or whatever, I hope you're having a good day, and go out there if you can at all and enjoy the spring sunshine. 51551, ray@rte.ie. Great finish. Start the jam on RT Radio 1. 51551 for your text. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. I'm the eldest of seven and my wife is the youngest of eight. We will celebrate our 39th anniversary on March 1st, the day the crows build their nests. That's Walter and Carlo. Congratulations in advance. So you follow what your man would predict, Mr. Lehman. A firstborn, a lastborn. Where do I rate? I'm 10 of 12. Will you be sort of in around the lastborn? They don't really cover big Irish families because I'm third eldest, so I'd be in probably up around the firstborn, but not firstborn. Just saw the slot about Dolly Parton on providing the books to libraries on the news. Seemingly, it stemmed from the fact that there was illiteracy among the people she grew up with in Texas, including her own father. So she said that no child should grow up not knowing how to read or write. What a generous gesture, says Mary. And I was the youngest of three. Both my parents were older, says Steve. And I'm a GP just back from working in Australia. I had cervical smear test results within a week for women, and they have introduced HPV testing. Ireland's healthcare system pales in comparison on so many levels. We were supposed to have the HPV testing, which is more precise, more accurate, by September of last year. Now they're saying it won't be introduced until next year. That's 2020. So it's gone from September 2018 to 2020. I'm sure it was your mother who sent you that card. Well, with nine children now, I doubt it that it was my mother. But the secret admirer was probably your aunt or even your mother. I sent cards to all my nephews who were suitably mystified and still are. Anonymous, I bought my wife a teddy bear holding a box of Butler's chocolates. She's at work and not listening to the show. Can't wait to see her face when she sees it. It's our first Valentine's Day married. Ah, it's great, says that person. And St. Valentine's Day, sun shining, and Paul Weller, happy days. And what you give is what you get. I'm off the cigarettes 18 days today, and I'm quite pleased with myself. Unfortunately, cigarettes are, in my opinion, the most addictive legal drug of all times. The majority of smokers don't want to smoke, but are addicted. I stopped 18 days ago because of a bit of a scare, and it amazes me how getting that scare made my decision to stop a bit easier. My daughter Sinead also quit, so please, God, we will quit this time for good. Regards, Norma. Well, good luck to you, Norma, and good luck to you, Sinead. It's a difficult thing to do. a very difficult thing to do. It's very addictive. And as Keith Richards says, you're surrounded by them everywhere you go. Fewer and fewer people are smoking, which is great. It's 18% now. 18. Because I remember we read out those statistics last week. 18% of the Irish population smoke. Re-firstborn kids. It depends on age of parents. Young parents, less anxious. Relaxed parenting. Had my first in my early 20s. Was so cool about everything. She grew up to be sunny and positive. So there. Yeah, I know it's generalizations. And then these people, you know, they're sitting at home one day. What'll I write a book about now? Oh, how your position in family affects your relationships. Let's see if we can develop a thesis on that one. And a book is born, Mr. Lehman. 51551, ray at rte.ie.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or if you're dropping us a text message, it's 51551. I sent a Valentine card to my son and daughter every year signed Guess Who. Last year, my son said, "Mom, give it up. We know it's you." They're 30 and 25. My intentions were well meant. Of course they were. 1 year off the cigarettes. I put on 2 stones. Stephen, you're healthier, Stephen, though, and the weight will right itself eventually. Now, on Tuesday, we spoke to Vincent Laverty in Louth about his search for a piano, and Vincent is back on the line now. How are you doing, Vincent?
Good afternoon, Ray.
Good to talk to you again. Remind us why you wanted the piano.
Well, I wanted the piano for a retirement home here in the northeast of County Louth. 70% of the residents there would have maybe Alzheimer's. So each week I'd go down and play for an hour and a half, all the old songs that would remind them of their years when they were growing up, you know, and going to dance halls and listening to the likes of Jim Reeves and Dean Martin, all those type of sounds, you know.
And we had a chat and a lot of people text in about the beneficial effects of music for people who have dementia or Alzheimer's. So it's a lovely thing that you're doing, Vincent.
Yeah, thanks very much. Greg.
Yeah. So we put out the call and we got offers of pianos from everywhere, from Belmullet to Bray, from Wexford up to Carndonagh at the north, like loads of offers. But you were very particular about your piano, weren't you?
I am. I like to see photographs of it. And then I was listening to somebody playing it last night, the one that I hope to be getting shortly, you know. Okay.
Well, enter stage left, Martin. How are you doing, Martin?
Ray, how are you doing?
Good to talk to you. You were one of the people. You're in, whereabouts in the country are you?
I'm in Galway, based in Galway, Galway City.
And you heard Vincent on the other day, and you have a piano.
Well, actually, I didn't actually hear Vincent myself, but I mentioned it to a friend of mine. We've got an office here. I work with a company called Copperfast. We keep your internet safe. We do cyber security and everything here. And we recently moved into some new offices. And the builder who did the work for us, Eamon Burke, I mentioned it to him because he's doing some work in my house for me as well. His wife phoned me because her dad had Alzheimer's. She heard the thing on the show. So she phoned me and she said, "I just wonder, would you be interested in getting rid of that piano?" And she told me all about what she'd heard on the show. So I dropped you an email, and your man Niall got in touch then, and myself and Vincent have been playing the piano to each other down the phone the last 24 hours.
So Vincent, you insisted that Martin audition his piano for you.
Exactly. His daughter auditioned very well last night.
So talk us through that, Martin. What happened exactly last night?
Well, I'll tell you what, if I auditioned it, Vincent would not be taking the piano. I guarantee you that. But no, Alva is our youngest daughter, our youngest of four. She's 18. She's actually doing her mocks at the minute. She's got her last day on mocks today. So,
good luck, Alva.
Good luck with that. You're wishing me good luck with that, Ray.
No, I'm wishing. I'm saying Alva, just in her absence, I'm saying good luck, Alva, with the mocks and the Leaving Cert. Go on.
No, you should be wishing me good luck with it. But no, she's great, and she's been playing the piano since she was about 6 or 7. She wants to do musical theatre, so she's currently in the throes of doing auditions in London and hopefully New York and all that sort of stuff.
Nice.
So she's had a couple of pianos, and she's got this one now. But she moved on to the keyboard recently because she plays a lot in her room and does various videos and puts a lot of stuff up on YouTube and all that sort of stuff. So the piano is there. And my wife, Nuala, has asked myself and her brother, my brother-in-law, Noel, to move it many times over Christmas. Now, we got together a few times, Ray, to move it, but we invariably didn't move it and ended up going for a few pints instead. So that's how Vincent has now got his hands on the piano. So
And does your wife want it out of the house? She does. Is she,
out.
Okay.
Somebody famously one time.
Right. So this is—it's all worked out then, hasn't it? It's perfect. It's win. It's win, win, win. Out, and win.
Yeah. Look, we're delighted that it's going to a great cause and a great home. And I've chatted to Vincent a few times the last few days. So last night then I sent him a couple of pictures of it. And Alva was studying for music last night. She was doing music outside school for Leaving Cert. So she came home and it was about 9:30, 10 o'clock, I think, Vincent. So I called him up and I said, look, will you play just so that he knows that it actually works. So she played down the phone. I think that's... You were quite happy there, Vincent, right?
I was indeed. Yeah.
It sounds good, does it, Vincent? Right.
It does. Now, what I'd like for you, Ray, maybe to put out over the radio today, maybe the services of a piano tuner, or maybe that right. might get us the same services.
We'll get you a tuner. About getting it from Galway over to Louth?
There's a volunteer for that, Kenneth Finnegan in Lordship. Just doesn't know yet that he's volunteered for it yet, you know?
Right. Look, before you even asked there, Anthony Woods was on to us. I'd be happy to donate a free piano tuning. Piano tuning and repairing, Anthony Woods. We'll give him a plug there.
Oh, that's great.
So there, even that was there on my screen even before you asked. It's not the generosity of strangers. The generosity of strangers. Well, listen, we're only a small part of it, but we're so happy to be involved in facilitating this. Martin, you've got brownie points there for getting the piano out of the house. Vincent, you're going to be singing, and it's a brilliant thing you do. So thanks to you both.
Thank you.
Good luck with everything. Okay, good luck. See
thanks,
you.
Ray,
bye.
Ray,
can I just give a quick shout out to everybody in the office here at Copperfast, and they're all listening to me outside.
Right.
And if I forget them, I never get another cup of tea out of them.
So right. Copperfast. There you go.
Thank you, man.
Go on. See you, Vincent. See you, Martin.
Okay,
bye.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye. 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 Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Or ray@rte.ie. Now, Kate Dawson is a PhD student in the School of Psychology in NUIG in Galway. She's just published a study that tracks young people's engagement with pornography, and Kate is in our Galway studio. Good afternoon, Kate.
Hello, how are you?
Good to talk to you. So, this is the biggest study of porn use in Ireland ever done.
Yes, it is. Yeah. So we had over 2,000 participants complete the quantitative study. So complete the survey.
Yeah.
So that looked at kind of trends of porn use in Ireland. So like when people first see it, how much they watch and why they watch it. And then we have some qualitative focus group data as well.
Okay. Well let's do the quantitative research first.
Cool.
Because... I've been quoting a thing for the last few years because a couple of ladies from England told me that they had done research in England and that the average age when young boys encounter pornography is around 10 and a half, 11.
Yeah.
What does your research suggest?
So I suppose our sample overall was from people who were 18 to about 65. So if you looked at the stats for first exposure, at that total age group, it was about 14, 15. But then when we looked specifically at the 18 to 24-year-old Irish people, the average age was between 10 and 13. So that would be about right. The average kind of internationally for boys is 11. But it is higher for girls, between 14 and 17.
Yeah, and what your research suggests then is that because of the availability of porn now on smartphones, that people are encountering it a lot younger.
Yeah, absolutely. We actually collected some data on this a few years ago in NUIG as well, and it looks like there's been a 3% increase in early exposure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just give us a bit of your background before we go any further.
Cool. So I work as a sex educator for the Wiser Sex Education Programme in Galway. So our remit is Connacht. So we kind of go to schools all over Connacht. And my PhD research is on pornography. Looking at the experiences of young Irish people and what do they think about porn, but also to use this information so we can develop evidence-based pornography educational interventions as well.
Okay. So as part of Wiser, you're going into primary schools.
Yes.
You're invited in by the schools, is that it?
Yes, that's it, yeah.
And is it sex education?
For sex education. Now, most of the work I do is in secondary schools. So it's like transition year students. And we're starting to work more with second year students now. But we do go into some schools and do sex education in primary school as well.
Okay. And you invite the students to ask you questions?
Yeah. So, we do five or six sessions. So, you know, we'd come in and do an hour and a half of work, and then we'd come back the following week, and the students would write anonymous questions, and we answer all of those questions then the next week. But we actually send these questions to the parents of these students as well, so they know exactly what questions are being asked, and they know exactly how we're going to answer those questions as well, yeah.
And those questions piqued your interest and suggested that there was a trend. Is that it?
Yeah. Like, we were getting, so we've noticed, you know, that there's been kind of a shift in the types of anonymous questions that we were getting. So a lot of them were, you know, around how do you form relationships and how do you know if someone likes you? And then all of a sudden we started getting questions about, well, what is porn, and people being like worried about their penis size and things like this. So that's originally how I kind of became interested in that area. So that's why I suppose I wanted to do my master's research, to see, was there a relationship between, you know, the porn that people watch and how they felt about their bodies.
Hmm. Okay. And is there?
It really, do you know what we found? It kind of depends on the context. So if you're watching porn to learn about sex, then you might be more likely to actually compare yourself to the people that you see. But if you're only watching porn to masturbate, which is the primary reason that people actually do use it, for some people there seems to be a positive outcome, in that they actually feel kind of more comfortable with their own bodies. Because we're, you know, we meet a lot of young people, especially young girls, so girls maybe around 11 or 12 or 13, and they're really disgusted by their bodies, they're really disgusted by their genitals, and this is really, really sad, you know. And this, I think,
how does that happen? How do we let that happen as a society?
We don't, I suppose we don't have the opportunity to see other people's genitals, you know, ever. And I think people then start seeing porn, and then there's a certain very specific type of body type that's in porn. Men are hired because they have larger than average penises. Women would sometimes have labia reductions, so to make the, you know, the vulva seem kind of more symmetrical. And I think there's a lot of shame, especially around women's genitals, and that girls don't talk about it. Whereas for guys, I think they kind of have more of a laugh and they think that penises are kind of funny. But girls just don't talk about it at all, you know?
Right. And you think that has to change?
I really, really do. Yeah, it's not good enough, you know, that people are having disappointing first-time experiences, you know, sexual experiences, and feeling bad about themselves. And I think sometimes people feel like they have to rely on porn as sort of a guide to sex because they don't have the confidence or the information to make decisions about their sex lives that they actually have thought about and kind of coincide with their own values.
Hmm. Ideally, of course, they'd be getting good sex education at home and in schools.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't feel the need to go to porn for sex education. It's a bit sad if they have to go to porn, isn't it, for sex education?
Like, I do understand it in one sense, because there is some stuff that you would only get to see in porn, you know, like the things that porn can provide, like very detailed imagery of, you know, where things go and different positions and stuff. That's the kind of thing that's probably not going to be in sex education, or maybe people will want more information. Okay. That sex education can provide, but what's really important is that, you know, we need people to understand that there are huge differences between the type of sex that they might see in porn and what to expect from their first time sexual experiences.
And that's what academics call porn literacy.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
just explain porn literacy to me.
Okay, well, what porn literacy definitely is not, and I think that some people worry about this, is that we're going in and we're going to be showing people porn. That's absolutely not what it is. It's about promoting critical engagement with porn. So giving young people enough information about real world sex and about porn so that they can make decisions about their sex lives and based on what kind of what they want to do themselves. So it's not about kind of pushing information on somebody. It's about giving them enough skills and information so that they can make very clear distinctions for themselves.
Yeah. A phrase that comes up over and over again when about sex education, and maybe porn literacy should apply to as well, is age appropriate.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're talking to, and there are parents listening and there are grandparents listening, and if you're talking to a 10-year-old who may have seen porn, how do you broach the subject, do you think?
So I think what is helpful, especially from, you know, having experience talking to young people as well, they get very uncomfortable if you ask them direct questions. So we would never do that. We would talk about sex and porn and masturbation in very general terms. So I think that's kind of helpful for parents to know. So if they say, you know, it's totally normal to be curious, and I'm aware that some people your age might see porn, but it's really important for you to understand that sex and porn is very different to sex in real life. But I think what what not to do is to become, you know, very accusatory and say, like, why are you watching it? Porn is bad. Where did you find it? Those kind of things. Because that's going to make a young person feel very defensive and go, oh God, I don't want to have this conversation.
So I suppose, you know, the hypothesis then, or from your point of view, is that it exists and we have to arm our children with the tools to manage it.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So that's kind of what we're aiming to do with the Active Consent Programme. So we've received funding from the Life's Too Good Foundation to develop an online porn literacy workshop, basically. So we're going to first roll it out with 15 to 16-year-olds and see how they get on. And then we will, you know, we can change that over time to be more appropriate for younger people if that's something that we think is necessary.
Yeah, Wiser is only available in the west of the country to a certain number of schools. It appears to me over and over again when we talk about these things that it depends on where you are in the country and who runs the school and who is the principal. That all sort of dictates what sort of sex education you're going to get in your school. That shouldn't be the case.
It shouldn't be the case, and unfortunately it is in some cases, but I do think that that is changing. And now the very fact that, you know, our guidelines around sex education are going to be updated, this will support, you know, principals and teachers in actually saying, okay, no, this is what, you know, the country is saying is important for young people. And I think the value in having, you know, online interventions as well as in-class interventions means that everybody can access information, even if they're in a school that won't actually allow, you know, comprehensive sex education to happen.
So the NCCA review of sex education is ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
The last time it was 1990, was it? It's over 20 years old, is it? The sex
education. Yeah, I think it was 1999, is it?
99,
yeah.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's about 20 years old, the sex education that's in schools at the moment, and they're changing it.
Mm-hmm.
Would your team there in NUIG, would they be approached and asked for input on it?
Yeah, so we're actually, Dr. Padraig McNeela, who is kind of the head of the Active Consent Programme, he's working really closely with the Department of Education on how to develop sexual consent programmes. And we do hope as well that all of this information that we've gathered based on student experiences around what they think about porn, that this will be used as well. But I think at the moment, you know, there seems to be, from what I've seen from the report, is that people think that you need to talk about porn in terms of risk, and I don't think that's good enough. I think if we just say that it's really bad, and if we just kind of try to push people away from it, it's going to shut off any conversations about the really important topics that we need to have around porn, so like around consent and body image, you know what I mean?
It's difficult though, and it's probably a generational thing as well, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
But like, I'm 54 and the only porn available to me was a magazine, which when I was in the FCA was available in the guard room, and they weren't even available in newsagents then.
Yeah.
Like, cut to now and the proliferation of porn. So that older people just think that it probably is something that should be banned, and they prefer for what didn't exist.
Yeah, I know. Like, I totally understand where, you know, where a lot of parents might be coming from, but I don't think we can bury our heads in the sand anymore. Like, we now have the data to show that lots of people are watching this at a really young age, and I totally understand that it's a tricky topic and that it's embarrassing. But it will take courage to start having these conversations. But I think, you know, people often get a bit intimidated when they think of having, you know, this big talk about, you know, the talk and having this conversation, yes, about sex. But it can be a lot more subtle than that. You can use these real life opportunities, like, you know, even, oh, I heard something on the Ray Darcy show this morning and this afternoon, and they're talking about porn. You know, you can use these kind of opportunities to have short and simple conversations rather than having this big chat that takes ages to plan.
And what about the responsibility, parents versus schools?
I think, you know, if there is, I think a three-pronged approach is going to be most effective. So if teachers who are, you know, working in schools all of the time, if they can deliver parts of the sex education program, but then maybe get external organizations to come in to do other topics, and then to support parents in having these conversations, then it can mean that we can actually make real changes in this country. And, you know, give people enough information so that they actually can be really healthy and happy young people.
And do you think it should be a teacher or an external person who delivers sex education and porn literacy?
I think it works best to have an external organisation come in. Just from speaking to students, they find it, you know, difficult if they have a teacher who has to teach them geography at one point in the day, and then all of a sudden they're talking about something like masturbation. You know, that's very difficult. And it's really difficult for teachers because a lot of them mightn't have that much time. They mightn't have had a lot of training. So it turns into then a very uncomfortable conversation where the teacher's uncomfortable and then the students are uncomfortable. Whereas external organisations, people feel like they can say whatever they want to them, they can ask whatever questions, and they know that it's not going to get back, and that they're kind of more comfortable, I suppose, in opening up and talking about these like difficult topics.
Yeah. I've spoken to Richie Sadlier before, and one of your colleagues there, is it Alice Burns?
Elaine Burns.
And they go into a school and they are external people.
Yes.
And Richie has said, and Alice has said as well, that they get a better reaction from the pupils because all of those things that you've just outlined. Let's see what people are saying. A question for your contributor. When you're engaging with primary school children, how far do you deviate from the RSE, the Department of Education, I suppose it is, RSE programme?
No, so we would follow the recommended RSE guidelines, but then we wouldn't shy away from answering a question. So say, you know, it might be in the guidelines that say we would talk about porn, but then, and we wouldn't plan on talking about porn, but if somebody asks us about it in an anonymous question, you know, saying like, what is it? We don't shy away from answering that question. But the parents are already well informed of this in advance, so they know exactly what, you know, what potentially might come up.
And what about the whole moral thing around the porn industry and how women are treated and portrayed? Is that something you cover?
We would talk about that definitely with, you know, with older students.
Yeah.
But, like, unfortunately, you know, there is a very, like, dark underground part of this industry. Most of the porn industry is well regulated, and some porn companies are actually very highly ethical. But the problem is that you don't really know where your content is coming from if you're using a streaming site like Pornhub or RedTube. These are kind of like the Googles for porn. So your content could come from anywhere. And a lot of the ethically produced content, you know, that you can make sure that everybody is treated really well, nobody's being exploited, that they're behind a paywall. So it might be like €100 for a yearly subscription. And then you're never going to have a young person who's going to ask their parents for, well, you might, but it's unusual, you think, that a young person might ask their parent for a yearly subscription to an ethically produced porn site. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're going to access the free and accessible stuff.
Yeah.
And you just don't know really where that's coming from.
Shocking age for children watching porn. What's going to happen in the future? We used to be told we'd go blind if we were caught with a skin book. Well, I think I was told I'd go blind if I masturbated. But yeah, it's a variation of the same thing.
Yeah.
But that is a big question, though, because we had John Ronson on recently, and I don't know where he got this statistic from, and I didn't call him up on it, which I should have. He said that a lot of young men have erectile dysfunction now because of the proliferation of porn. But we don't know, do we, what's going to happen? What effect this is going to have on a whole generation?
You know, from the research so far, it seems that porn doesn't have any kind of negative or positive effect on most people, but there are some people who do have negative experiences. So, like, you know, there's this whole debate around like porn addiction and people are going to become addicted to it. That the research shows that there actually isn't enough evidence to support this idea of porn addiction. So I think, you know, we have the opportunity now to talk about porn and to talk about it in sex education so that people don't have very serious problems later on in life, and that they are comfortable enough to talk about it. So if they do have a problem, they can seek help.
And do you think, Kate, that porn literacy will be welcomed with open arms into schools around the country?
I completely understand that some people will struggle with it, but I actually conducted some research with parents to find out what were the, you know, the barriers and facilitators of talking about porn and masturbation with their kids. And most parents were actually really happy that this was on the cards, that people actually would be talking to them about pornography. Because I think some parents are really worried, you know, and they're concerned that this is going to be really bad for their child's mental health, and especially because a lot of parents might only get their information about porn from newspapers, and that's often really sensationalist, you know, like porn causes like sexual violence and these kind of things. So if parents aren't given enough information about the realities of porn and stuff, of course they might be frightened.
But I was reading your research there, and I'll let you go after this, but so the majority of men and women say that porn is not realistic in your research.
Yeah.
That's fair enough. But, and this is the but, 36% of men, that's over a third, say that it influences how they interact with a partner about sex.
Yeah.
And then another 37% says it influences the roles of men and women during sex.
Yeah, I think
so. That can't be good, can it?
No, and I think, you know, these findings are from 18 to, a lot of 18 to 24-year-olds. It's going to be different again for younger people who have actually no sexual experience and no information about sex. I think, you know, when it comes to being influenced as a young adult by porn, I think it's because there's this idea that if, you know, the people in porn are doing it right, these are people who know how to have sex and they know how to have good sex. So people kind of use that as a guide of on how to behave. So that, I suppose, that in one sense is kind of the problem that we can challenge, I suppose, in porn literacy as well.
This pushing sex education onto teachers is ridiculous. Irish parents are just lazy when it comes to the personal development of their own kids. Irish adults need to grow up and talk about these issues with their children. You just would not hear of such lazy parenting in Germany or the Netherlands. Well, there is sex education in Dutch schools, isn't there?
There is, and you have to kind of, I suppose, understand where Irish parents are coming from as well. You know, they've grown up in a country where you weren't allowed to talk about sex and that it was a dirty thing and you weren't allowed to have sex outside of marriage. So we have to be respectful of the fact as well that this is going to be a big change for a lot of people, but that we can actually support them in having these conversations as well. And then we will start to see societal changes.
A big concern for us is children being exposed to porn, and pornography now is generally hardcore. How do we protect children? That's Anne-Marie, who's a psychotherapist.
Yeah, I know. So I suppose, you know, you can use parental blocks and those kind of things, but a lot of the time, you know, people might be, or children might be shown porn by their friends, or they might Google something very, you know, timid, like, you know, breasts or something like that, and then they might be led to something more extreme. Did that answer your question?
I suppose people are just, you know, surely like every effort should be made to ensure that childhood is not ruined by adult issues. What you're saying is it exists and we have to live with it and we have to, you know, make sure that our children can handle it. That's what you're saying, that we can't...
Yeah, we can't shy away from it.
Yeah, we can't put our head in the sand anymore, and it's there. It's a reality of life, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, but we now have the...
For a lot of people, that's very uncomfortable.
Yes, I understand that. Yeah, I completely understand that. But
and the thoughts of a 10 or 11-year-old looking at porn is just, for some people, it's just, they can't get their heads around it. I can understand that. Porn is filth, end of. Bundy, serial killer, cited porn as being an instigator of his heinous life. Porn is just plain evil, says that person.
Okay, so I suppose that is one of the arguments that you would hear a lot, you know, that porn leads to sexual violence. But actually, for the studies that have kind of, shed some light on this relationship, is that it looks like people who are highly sexually aggressive, they might also watch a lot of porn, but both of those things are influenced by a third factor. So somebody who has high sex drive or who is highly impulsive, they might be more inclined to act aggressively, but they might also be more inclined to watch a lot of porn. But it's not necessarily that porn is actually causing the behaviour.
I suppose, maybe this is overly simplifying the thing, but the world would be a better place maybe without porn. I don't know, but it's there and we have to deal with it.
I think, you know, for adults, and it can be a very valuable thing. A lot of adults get a lot of enjoyment out of it and kind of enjoyment out of watching it with their partner, but it wasn't designed to be an educator for children, and that's why we need to design these interventions.
Yeah, they're looking at things that aren't meant for them.
Exactly, yeah.
And we need to deal with that. Okay. Kate Dawson, thank you so much. Porn Report is the report surveying students on pornography use and involving them in planning critical learning interventions. And what we didn't get around to talking about is the input that the students have into what you're planning for porn literacy. So you ask them what should happen so that they can be better equipped to deal with porn. And they gave you the input, which is great. Maybe we'll talk another time about that.
Perfect, that'd be great.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Sean and Connor Price are live in studio.
Are you all right?
LIS, that's what they have down here. LIS, live in studio. Great to see you.
Cheers, yeah.
Will I play a bit of the new single?
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. I've never heard it before. First time hearing it.
My heartbreak for you. My earthquake for you. We twist and turn because you're a storm, but I'm done chasing you. I won't chase. And my heartbreak for you. My earthquake for you. We twist and turn because you're a storm, but I'm done chasing you. I won't chase. Here's some food for thought from the soul chicken soup. Some people think I'm wild, it's probably because I'm a you, but not you. Here's the truth, I think you're kind of cute.
Storm, that's the new single from Sean and Connor Price. Was that a number one on iTunes?
Yeah, it went straight to number one on iTunes when we released it last Friday. So
congratulations.
Thanks,
congratulations, that sounds great. I was only talking about Connor O'Donoghue from Wild Youth the other day, and he co-wrote that with you.
Yeah.
There's something very energetic happening about the Irish music scene at the moment.
You know, it's great. Like, it's just kind of hard to choose what music to listen to, really, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of it about. A lot of minute about. You're on tour all over the place. I'm looking here, where are you now? You've done all that. March 2nd, you're in Limerick. Drogheda, then Ennis, April 17th. Thurles, Dublin, Cork. Sligo, Letterkenny, Dundalk, Wexford, Belfast, Castlebar. The Dublin one is Vicar Street, is it?
No, Olympia Theatre.
And you're going to the States. Who's going to tell me about that?
Yeah, well, we can't really tell you much about that, but we're going to the States. We have a few meetings and
stuff like that, yeah. Some stuff.
Yeah, so okay. You'll be the first to know if, when stuff happens. Yeah.
So there could be a big signing there. Yeah. Well, good luck with that.
Not going to say anything there.
What are you going to sing for us?
We're going to do a cover of John Bellion's All Time Low.
Yeah. Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Cheers. Enjoy.
And I was the knight in shining armor in your movie. Well, put your lips on mine and love the aftertaste now. I'm a ghost, I call your name, you look right through me. And you're the reason I'm alone. I've been trying to fix my pride, but that is broke. That is broken. Lie, la, 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 la. I try to hide, but now you know it. And that I'm at an all-time low, 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 low. I've been trying to fix my pride, but that is broken. That is broken. Lie, la, 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 la. I try to hide, but now you know it. That I'm at an all-time.
It's the same old ish, I'm feeling low again. Another iPhone 6, I have to throw again. You raise your voice, I lose my head, I need to blow again. Like watch me cancel up the show again, go again. Bro, you need to allow it, cause you're better than that. You know sometimes I wish I never met her in that. You know it's tour time, bro, you know there's pressure in that. I'm at an all-time low and I can't settle with death. She said, look, bro, you willing? And then I started grinning. Like, yeah, man, you're right, I'm like the hell with all the trimmings. I jump in my whip and just before I go and scurry off, I roll down my tins and say it's her loss. We're done now.
I've been trying to fix my pride, but that is broke. That is broken. Lie, la, la, la. I tried to hide, but now you know it. And that I'm at an all-time low, 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 low. Trying to fix my pride, but that is broken. That is broken. Lie, la, 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 la. I try to hide, but now you know it. And that I'm at an all-time low.
That was great.
Cheers.
That was good. That was really good.
Thanks, Will.
Connor, you're parking the education.
I'm in TY, so it's a project.
You're in TY,
this is
a music project you're on.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Okay. We've been working on it for a year.
And you're going to the States and you have some meetings with big record companies, so good luck with that.
Cheers, mate.
And thanks so much for coming in. Thanks, Storm is the current single, and that was excellent. Sean and Connor Price, thank you.
Thanks, cheers, mate.
Anish, now 51551 for your texts. You can send us emails to ray@rte.ie. Last night's Operation Transformation saw one leader take a step back from the programme. But it was good news for Jean Tierney from Limerick, and she has joined us in our Limerick studio. Afternoon, Jean.
Good afternoon, Ray, and everybody. How are you?
Good, and congratulations.
Thanks very much.
Like, what a couple of months you've had, huh?
I definitely didn't think I'd be talking to you today about this, but sure, look, isn't it the best news in the world?
We had you on the telly after the first week of Operation Transformation, and I was saying to you that your story had captured the imagination of the country.
Yeah.
Now, for people who didn't hear it, you might just you know, bring us back to 2015.
Yeah, so the last couple of years probably haven't been the easiest. In 2015, Paddy and I both found out we were pregnant, but unfortunately it was an ectopic pregnancy. And then in 2017, we found out we were pregnant again. And at 34 weeks, we gave birth to a beautiful little girl called Sloane, who unfortunately passed away 4 days later, but had an incredible little life for her 4 days on this earth. And then at the end of last year, unfortunately, we miscarried again in September. So,
God, it's just even hearing it back again, it's heartbreaking. Heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's not the easiest, but look, I think we take the good things from it. As I said, we had a beautiful little girl who showed us what it is to live, and I think that's what we take from every day.
Yeah, and tough for yourself and Paddy.
Yes.
Yeah, and Paddy has been a rock for you, I would imagine, through it all.
Yeah, like, these things will definitely test you, but, like, I am absolutely blessed with everything I have, and Paddy is amazing, and, like, I think we have grown so much stronger as a couple because of it. But, yeah, the two of us, we're in it now for the long run, I think.
Yeah, we are. So this time last year, you were mourning Sloane.
Yeah, so I think, like, it was my mum that summed it up last week, because obviously when we found out we were pregnant and we're in the middle of the show where obviously you can't keep it a secret. Mm. Obviously, you know, there is that fear and anxiety because of our history. But I think, like, when I told my parents, Mam said, you know what, Jean, last year we were sitting here mourning. This year, isn't this, like, just the best news ever? So we should be celebrating it. And I think, you know what, that sums it all up.
How did it feel when you discovered you were pregnant?
Well, it wasn't planned, obviously. But you know what? I think, look, I think you have to take these things as they come. And I've definitely would say that, like, the last couple of weeks, what I have done for myself, like, and the show has done for me, has put me in a much better headspace and health space. And I think, like Paddy said on last week's show, he felt that I was back to being me. And I guess, like, I probably didn't even realise how far I had gone from myself. Mm-hmm. So I think when we found out we were pregnant, like, obviously it's like, oh my God, and plus you're on TV and you're so close to the end, and I wanted to run that 5k in less than 30 minutes, but you know what, like, I can only describe it as winning the lotto, because it's something that we want. Mm. And it just seems like it's a little bit hard. It's a bit out of reach for us at the moment, but I'm just speechless.
Yeah, there's a tradition, and I suppose it's to do with the first scan, that people don't tell anybody else that they're pregnant, never mind the whole country, until 12 weeks. So you're 7 weeks pregnant.
Yeah, so I'm just about 7.5 weeks pregnant, so I actually have had 2 scans already. So I guess I've a bit of that tradition I have kept. look, like, I think even as I said to you before, like, with the ectopic and our neonatal debt with Sloane and the miscarriage, I suppose I never realised it because I hadn't gone through it. But history has taught us not to talk about these things, and we're not educated on what to say or what to do when this happens. It's more like, okay, don't say something because we might upset them, or we don't know what to say. And I would hope that, like, our little girl has taught us, and maybe taught the rest of the world, it's okay not to be okay. And it's okay to say, well, how are you? Like, we think about Sloane because that's what we love. So I think, like, even with this, you know what? If a person wants to tell someone when they're 4 weeks pregnant, if a person doesn't want to tell someone until they're just about to give birth, I think that needs to be everybody's own decision. I don't think we should be able to dictate that anymore, because you know what? This is one of the best bloody things in life. Like, we have a little human grown inside us at the moment. So, like, why shouldn't I shout it from the rafters? Like, this is my joy and Paddy's joy and my family's joy. And I hope with everything in my heart that we get to the end.
Yes.
But if we don't, like, I now have a whole nation behind me to, like, be okay to say, geez, that's not great, but we're here for you. So,
yeah, you've just said it there. You have the whole nation with you.
Yeah, I have to say, really, like, I was nervous, like, and Paddy was, and I'm sure my family was, because, you know, you've said it yourself, like, we have been conditioned not to tell people till after the first scan, not to tell people till after 12 weeks. So by doing this, we're breaking a tradition. And I think, like, even one of your last speakers was talking about it, it's the society norms that we're challenging a lot of that and a lot of perception. As I said, like, I'm not here to be a martyr or Paddy or what we're doing. But, like, I would hope that, you know, if there's another family sitting at home and you've just found out you're pregnant, bloody well tell people. It is absolutely fantastic.
Are you superstitious about anything?
Am I superstitious? Oh, yeah. Well, like, I would believe in probably signs and stuff. But I think, like, I'm getting a really good vibe, so I'm really hoping that everything...
I'm sure people have asked you these questions, like, does it feel different than before? And
no, like, I suppose, like, I'm full of nauseousness and headaches and tiredness, which I obviously didn't pick up on those clues on the last few TV shows. But, no, like there is a certain amount of nerves, and that doesn't matter, even if you're gone past 12 weeks. For me and Paddy and my family, like, every little step will be a nervous one for us, because we have got to that finish line before, and unfortunately, it didn't come to us.
You've reached a number of... So with the ectopic, how far in were you when?
I don't know, because I'd say it was probably about a month or two.
Okay.
I don't know how far.
Yes,
and then obviously with Sloan, we were 34 weeks. And then when I had the last miscarriage, it was about 9.5 weeks.
Yeah.
So I suppose my milestone at the moment is just to get past 10 weeks.
when you look at the statistics around miscarriages, that 1 in 5 pregnancies result in miscarriages, isn't it shocking how little it's talked about?
Yeah, it is. But, like, as I said to you, Ray, like, I was 30 years of age when we had our ectopic pregnancy. I thought you got pregnant and you had a baby. Like, that's just how we are taught to think of it. And I was definitely one of those women that when I saw pregnant people, I was like, sure, you're only just pregnant, mother of God. Believe me, when you see a pregnant woman, put her feet up, look after her. But yeah, it is, like, and you know what? I think even that statistic, it might be more than that, because all I know is that, like, the amount of women and fathers and husbands and partners that have reached out to me and Paddy and said, you know what, that's actually happened to us. And I have known some of these people for years, and I never knew this. And I think that's, you know, that just shows how we need to start talking about it, because it's nothing to be ashamed of. If anything, if someone can throw your hands around you and give you a big hug during that time, you'll be so much better.
Yeah, we need to open up about things, don't we?
We sure do.
In saying that, some people prefer to keep this sort of thing private, you know, and that's their choice.
Oh, look, Ray, like, I even go back to the time when me and Paddy had Sloan. Like, we did not know how we were going to deal with it. Like, no parent ever can, no person ever can. And you can't tell someone. Like, if me and Paddy were to go through that again in the morning, we may deal with that completely different. But I think that goes back to everybody's an individual. And if you want to tell someone, tell someone. And if you don't, that is your choice. I don't think we should be telling people what they should do.
Does it bother you at all that the nation knows your medical history?
Do you know what? At this stage now, they nearly know my knicker size. So, no, look, do you know, like, there's certain things that we have that is private to us.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, I always feel if something happens, there has to be a purpose behind it. So when we had all that happen to us, and especially, like, when we had the miscarriage last year, like, there was a few days where I pretty much hated the universe and I couldn't understand it. And all I kept saying was, there has to be a reason for this. Like, why would you be dealt all of this? And, like, I'm now thinking it's because, do you know what, it was for us to talk about it, and Sloan, given her name was Warrior, maybe she is helping someone else today. And, like,
this is her legacy.
This is her legacy. So the nation knowing my medical history, yes, is a little bit deep.
On your medical history, you weren't advised not to try again.
No. So we were just told after Sloan to wait for 6 months. But other than that, like, all that has happened to us has just been bad luck.
Right.
I don't know what I did in a previous life. But it has nothing to do with any of us, and there should be no reason that I can't have a healthy pregnancy.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that this is the time.
Oh,
yes.
And you would be, I would imagine, you're classified as a high risk pregnancy now.
Yeah.
What does that entail? So you don't do Operation Transformation. That's one of the things that would be advised, I would imagine.
Yeah. So I suppose, like, yes, I'm classified as a high risk pregnancy. So I'm getting absolutely amazing care from the Limerick Maternity Hospital, and I am under the best care of from Dr. Narrow. She is an absolute, like, there's some people that are put in this earth and I just call them earth angels, and she is one of them. So, like, she is at the end of a text message, the end of a phone call. I'm getting scanned, like, every week. If I wanted to be in there every day...
For a scan, she'd scan me.
I just need to rest a little bit more. So, in regards to Operation Transformation, I just couldn't keep up the level of activity. Obviously, it's very important to still get out and do your walk, so I'm trying to do that kind of every second day. And then, like, food-wise as well, obviously you remain eating healthy, but just because I'm suffering from nausea, I just eat a little bit more.
Yes.
And snack a bit. But like the guys, the experts, the catcher and the team, like, they've just been absolutely amazing in their support.
Because last night, when you were talking to the group or talking to Catherine, you were sort of surprised because you'd watched Operation on the television. And you thought, oh yeah, they say that, but probably that isn't the case.
Yeah, like, come here, look, we're all the same, right? You sit at home and no matter what you watch, you kind of go, Asher, that can't be true, or that can't be real, or that can't change that person's life that much. It's only a TV show. But like, I think the public only see snippets of what happens. So like, I've had Carl, Eddie, Aoife, Sumi, Catherine, all the producers on the phone to me, like, when there is no camera, checking in on me. I have the other four leaders, like, come here, they're like brothers and sisters now. Like, yeah, they definitely know my knicker size. But, you know, it does, like, as I said, ye only see, and the public only see a section of it. But, like, if you give it your all, and I think this year all of us have been very open and honest, and I think the nation has just been... I just can't get over people and their amazing goodwill. I think, you know, this has shown me that, like, there is people out there. Like, when you ever have doubt or like a lack of faith or something, when you see all these people just coming out with like support, it just blows you away. Yeah. And it has certainly helped me, and I can't thank people enough.
And there's a real sense of a family with the leaders, yourself and Paul and Cahill and Pam and Siobhan. And you came up, when was it, last weekend to tell them that you were pregnant?
Yeah.
And that's a beautiful moment. We just play it in. This is when Jean told the other four leaders that she was expecting.
This last week has been a slight bit different, and I've probably been a little bit quieter because I haven't actually had anyone with the camera with me, so I've kind of just finished up a little bit earlier than you, because I've kind of in my own way won the lotto. So I'm pregnant.
Yeah, was that a great reaction?
Yeah, I'd say there was a lot of bleeps in that one. Yeah. Look, like as I say, like, people don't see what, like, everyone only gets a snippet on a Wednesday night of what we go through in a week. And for all of us, like, we sat around that table that night, Ray, and we all kind of spoke about the last few weeks, and not one of us mentioned our weight. Every single one of us mentioned the different headspace we're now in. And I was just blown away by that. But, like, we have come on this together. Like, there's days where we might not have the best of days, but we lean on each other. And when you're all going through it together, you do grow a friendship and a bond that's not explainable to people outside of it.
Yes. Yeah, well, there's a common experience there, and it's very intense.
Very intense. Like, when you have a camera with you, like, 4 days a week, and then you're up in Dublin, and as I say, and bearing it all to the nation.
Yeah.
It is a pretty, like, spectacular experience, but mental.
We got an email. I just mentioned it at the top of the show, but I'll read it to you now. I wonder, could you please pass on this little message to Jean Tierney when she joins you today? I've been following her journey on Operation Transformation, partly hiding behind my fingers because I am living her story. Our beautiful baby made the same trip to Sweden last year as her family did with their Sloan. And while our sweetheart did make it back to Ireland, she didn't make it into our home. She died in October and we're heartbroken. It was such a shock to hear Jean speak about it on the show. I'm so sorry that this is what we have in common. Can you please tell her how happy I was to hear her wonderful news last night? I'm sending so much love and strength to her and her family. So there, and I can't give you the names because they're withheld there, but I can pass them on to you if you want them.
you're definitely going to have me cry.
No, yeah, but that's, you know, you're giving people strength, and it's such an important thing. And you're so honest and so positive, and like, because you could be forgiven after what you've been through to just, you know, go in, pull the curtains, lock the door, and not talk to anybody. But yet you're out there and telling your story on national television.
I think though it shows, like, from even listening to that lady, it's so common, unfortunately, but we just don't talk about it. And like, be under no illusion, there is days when I do close those curtains and I try and hide my car. Doesn't work though, because my family will pop up and look after me. But like, I think, as I said, if Sloane, our little warrior, has allowed that lady to share her story with us, well, isn't that amazing?
Isn't that amazing, yeah. All good wishes to Jean. She'll be in my prayers as that person. And the first Operation Transformation baby. Best of luck, Jean. Fingers crossed. I was in tears watching Jean on last night's Operation Transformation. So, so happy for her. And it's great news for Jean. I'm delighted for her. She's amazing and a great lady. And what an incredible young woman. Inspirational. Wishing her and her hubby every good luck. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but he's not your hubby.
No, he's not yet.
No, because I was watching back the first episode of Operation Transformation.
And they called him my husband.
Yes, they did. Yes.
they're just like yourself now, Ray. They're trying to get him to shove it on. Ah, no, look, we, as I said, we've been through so much now. I think, you know, there's a lot of couples out there that may be married, but I think Paddy is the best in the world. And whether you're married or not, like, all you need is someone that loves you and cares for you and supports you. And that's what I have.
And have you been together since you were 15?
Oh, so, yeah, but you're like, he'll kill me for this now as well. So, yeah, I think we probably kissed back when we were 15 or 16. But I wanted to go off and travel and have a good time. But we got back together at 30. And as they say, the rest is history.
At 30?
Yeah.
Oh, right. So you went off and came back.
There was a few times in between that we may have kissed.
Right,
you know?
Right. You may have. Christmas and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We won't get into specifics.
No. Yeah, Paddy will tell you the specifics because he remembers everything.
Does he? Yeah, right. And that wedding dress is still up in the wardrobe, is it?
That wedding dress will be wore. Hopefully now it will be wore and we will have a double celebration on that day.
Oh, and that would be amazing.
Yeah, it would.
Where did you get it, or how did you spot it? Was it a bargain or?
Oh, but you go away with your bargains.
No,
do you know what? Look, I think, like, I am a little bit quirky. So I had spotted this dress that is not your usual wedding dress, let's just say. Right. And I sent it to my mum and I was like, this is my wedding dress. So we took a trip up to Newry because we couldn't stay in the counties down here. We had to go across the border. I hope Brexit doesn't come in. I shouldn't even say that because I might be in a bit of trouble getting it. But look, it was amazing. It's exactly who I am. It embodies my personality, I think. Yeah. And saw it, knew it was mine, and that was it. It just had to be there.
Yeah. Well, listen, again, on behalf of all the women you've helped around the country and men, thanks so much. It's a pity that you won't finish out the Operation Transformation journey, as they call it, but you will be there on the final night to walk up the catwalk.
Yeah.
And you get a new outfit.
I'll get a new outfit. Look, I think, as I said, you know, weight-wise, I've lost about a stone. I think the last measurements Carol did, I had about 40 inches lost all over my body. But I think what I have gained more than that is self-confidence, health, my mind, and a nation of amazing people. Yeah. And I think, isn't that worth so much more?
Yeah. Well, it's a pity you're down in Limerick because I want to give you a big hug.
we'll do a virtual one.
There you go. Virtual hug. There you go. And give a hug to Paddy when you go home as well.
I will. And thank you, Ray. And seriously, I just want to thank everyone for being so understanding. As I said, you know, putting it out this early was a risk because it's going against social norms.
Yeah.
But just everyone, every god, man, child, woman, let's just get there.
Yeah, positive energy going
positive
your way.
Positive energy.
Yeah. Mind yourself.
You.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
See you, Jean.
Bye.
Talk soon. Bye now.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
There you go, 5 on 5, 5 on, RaidRTE.ie. Conor and Sean are just taking their gear out. Good luck, lads. Good luck in America. Good luck at all the gigs. And Storm is their new single there. And what an amazing lady, Jean Tierney, from Limerick. Just to say, as a fellow Limerick woman, how proud I am to share a city with her. So impressive, brave, strong, joyous, positive and articulate, with a gorgeous turn of Limerick phrase. Wishing her all the best of luck in the world in the coming months. So that's on Jean. There's loads of positive texts for Jean. We all wish her the best, and Paddy too. On the cigarettes, giving up cigarettes is like losing your best friend. He's with you all the time, waiting to help you out. Times of stress, times of depression, good times, bad times. He's there in your pocket waiting for you. So imagine what it feels like when he's gone. It's hell. But it can be done. I'm off them now after being on 60 a day. So it can be done. You just have to make your mind up to stick it out. That's Paddy, who's been successful. And 8 years off cigarettes on 10th of March, and I'll be celebrating by running the Barcelona Marathon. Paul and Balbriggan. Well done, Paul. That's great, isn't it? The Barcelona Marathon. On age gaps, I'm the youngest in my family and wife's the eldest in her family. It's our fourth wedding anniversary today also. Alan and Claire, happy Valentine's Day to you both. And when later children arrive, the parents are too exhausted to enforce rules, so the younger ones are left to their own devices and are more carefree. This is on a book which suggests that where you are in the family dictates who you get on with in a relationship. We must talk to that man. He's in America, so we'll put a call in and see if he'll talk to us about that book. Speaking of cigarettes and Valentine's Day, I just saw a guy coming down the street in Dundalk carrying a huge teddy and a big bunch of flowers, and he's surrounded by a cloud of cigarette smoke. I would not like to get or receive that smelly teddy, says that person. And I got my wife a sheep's heart for Valentine's Day. Really? Got it from the butchers. We were still dating at the time. She was living at home. Her dad was delighted. He said, "He's a good lad. I'll cook that for the dinner tomorrow." 60 years ago. That's Charles in Dublin. That's a great story. A secret admirer is best kept secret. Back 45, 46 years ago, I received such a card only to have the sender reveal his identity by quoting the message he wrote. I was a vibrant 17-year-old. He was an elderly man with a big tummy and yellowing teeth. Talk about bursting your bubble, says Liz. And seriously, on porn, we got loads of reaction to Kate Dawson. Some negative, some positive. Sure, the research already suggests that porn has a huge negative effect on relationships. It's not benign entertainment, says Pat and Sligo. And the porn genie is out of the bottle. It's too late to put it back in again. It's a generational thing. Most people take it as fantasy. Someone who takes offence is imposing their moral values on other people, says that person. And this conversation is deeply upsetting. I'm glad I wasn't brought up in this age. Innocence lost, or more accurately, stolen. And how can that woman say pornography is good for a relationship? It demeans women and makes sex unrealistic, says David. And Kate Dawson, so smart, great interview. I'm sure she's 90% right. And we'll leave the final word to Catherine, who wants to congratulate Catherine Thomas for the touching, wonderful interview she's done with Jean during her time on Operation Transformation. Jean is brilliant, and good luck to her and Paddy. And of course, Catherine has some personal experience which makes her empathise, I suppose, a lot stronger with Jean. That's it from us. We are back tomorrow at 3 o'clock. Mary Wilson's on the way. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday evening.
The Ray Darcy Show. Listen back on the RTE Radio Player.